Welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 52, recorded March 7th, 2011. I had to say that because even though that's usually Kelly's thing, she's laughing too hard. Because this is like the seventh time we started recording this evening, and it hasn't worked. So we're just going to go. It's okay. We're just going to go with this one, because she's laughing, and that's a beautiful thing, so that's okay. All right.
Okay. We are going to tell you who our contributors are going to be this evening, so that you can listen for your name. And if you hear your name, you know you want to finish listening to the episode. You know, I don't know how many of you ever watched Romper Room when you were kids. You know, but they had that little magic red circle, and she'd always look through it, and I see Tommy and Bill and Jane, and you always would listen for your name, and
yeah.
I never heard my name. Okay, so listen for your name. I've got my little red circle here in front of my face. Robert and Carlos and Andreka are going to be our contributors today. We will be talking about their messages and some questions they had.
Right, so thank you for contributing.
Yes, I will try to contain myself. Okay, do you have any fish news for us today?
I just have a bit. I noticed today in my office tank that, not in my office tank, at my office that my Opaeula, I have one tank of Opaeula there. They just released eggs, and there are about four zoe, or however you say it, zoe, floating around in the tank. The larval planktonic forms of the Opaeula.
Oh, you're a grandpa. The little shrimp. Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, it's not the first time that it's happened, but thank you.
The sea monkeys in with the Opaeula.
Oh yeah,
they're
maturing,
large-ish.
Yeah,
well, you know, bigger anyways.
Yeah, some of them are the males are exhibiting the claspers, and the females are starting to show some egg cases. So they're maturing in there. They're not nearly as many as there were when we started out, but it seems to be working.
So it's pretty cool.
That's kind of interesting. Also, I'd just like to point out that I've talked about my baby bristlenoses, and I moved some of the bristlenoses using a trap to another tank where I allow a lot of algae to grow, and they are growing like mad. Of course, that's not all I feed them. I supplement the algae with lots of other food as well. But they're growing like crazy, and the ones in the 55 with the adults are doing okay, but they're not growing nearly as quickly, and I think that has to do with the fact that just the concentration of food is lower, and so I think it's not very efficient to try to grow them out in a 55, at least without adding lots more food than I am, and I'm already adding quite a bit, so.
They just have to travel more to find food.
Yeah, they have to expend more energy finding food than the others do, because it's just right in front of the others all the time, so I think I'm just going to have to trap them all out and move them. When I've raised them in 10 and 20 gallons, they do much better than in a 55, so there you go.
Well, that's okay. It's like you can't put an infant in a king-size bed. It doesn't work.
That's true.
Okay, are we going on to Robert's message now?
We are, yeah.
Here we go.
We're going to listen to Robert's message.
Hello, Russ and Kelly. This is Robert from Michigan. I've been meaning to call in for a while, but when I heard about your contest, that was just a bump I needed. I have a question for you about uninvited critters in the tank. This is in my living room tank. I have these little creatures that have been living in the gravel for a while. I think by calling them creatures, it makes it sound a little more Muppet than it actually is. But they're like these little worms. I don't know if they're not, I don't think they'd technically be a worm, but they're like a little wriggling thing. They're probably no larger than a couple millimeters long at the most. Small, white. The only time I really see them is if I disturb the gravel, like when I'm vacuuming in there, and they'll just kind of wriggle around in the water column until I suck them up or they disappear. Sometimes they'll get, like, stuck on the glass up on the top, and they'll still wriggle a little bit, but they really need the water medium to move around. I haven't done a lot of looking, but I'm completely at a loss as to what these things are, and if they constitute us like a threat to the fish's health in any way. I'm wondering if you've ever run across anything like this when you've kept fish, and if so, what a good way to get rid of them would be short of taking the whole tank apart. All right, thank you.
Okay, so Robert has little Muppety creatures.
Yeah.
Which, I gotta say, I love that you said Muppets because we're big Muppet fans, so...
Incidentally, that is true, yes. Okay, these worms... Now, a couple of things that you mentioned. One, that when you're moving things around in the water, that they tend to get up into the water column and squiggle around, move around in waves. That's a clue. Another that you mentioned is that they tend to get up on the glass up near the top of the tank and kind of stick there. As another clue. And I've seen these before. In fact, I've had them in tanks, and I do have them in tanks. And the good news is they're not harmful at all.
Hooray!
In fact, some fish will eat them. A lot of fish will eat them. If the fish is appropriately sized, that these little creatures will interest them, they will eat them, and some people even culture them for that purpose. I've done that myself. So
exactly what kind of worms are they?
They are called sometimes Darrow worms, D-E-R-O, or they're also called Nias worms. I think it's N-A-I-A-S worms, something like that. And then they're sometimes called Microfex worms. Like Tubifex worms, but Microfex worms, because they're smaller than Tubifex worms and thinner. Now, it's quite possible, those are the names that they go by popularly in the hobby, but it's very possible that we're referring to a whole complex of species, but I don't know. I can't tell you, really, as far as that goes, or even an individual species that I'm aware of, but those are the names that they're usually known by, and as I said, they're harmless. So you don't have to worry about getting rid of them. I don't know if they're big enough to interest, you know, most of the fish you keep, clown loaches and gouramis and goldfish and so on. But things like guppies and rainbow fish and so on, they love them. And you really don't have to worry about them. They reproduce asexually, interestingly enough. They'll just kind of break off into pieces, and each piece will grow into a worm. Now, the... common earthworms that people often attribute that particular ability to can't actually do that. They can't be cut straight in half and regenerate. They can lose a few segments off either end and regenerate, but they can't actually go right through the middle. But these Microfex worms apparently can do so, for something very like that.
Wow.
So they'll reproduce asexually. If they get into large numbers, they will ball. They'll congregate into a ball, like grindle worms will when you put them in water. And if they don't have any predators, they will just sit in these balls on top of the substrate. Some people raise them by putting green scrubbies, you know, like you can with soilless grindleworm cultures. They'll sink some of those scrubbies in a tank and raise these on them and feed them on sinking pellets like shrimp pellets or algae wafers. And they will congregate in great numbers, and they'll just suck them up with an eyedrop or something like that and squirt them into a tank. So they can be a useful food. They take a while for the culture to get started. In Hawaii, I cultured some. I had a polyculture with moina and snails, I think ram's horn snails mostly, amphipods, and these Darrow worms. And it was just 1 gallon. It wasn't very big, but the moina can handle really high densities. And the snails, when they ate food, their waste provided food for infusoria, which the moina ate. I also supplemented that with yeast. And I would put bits of fish food in there, mostly pellets that the amphipods and the Darrow worms would eat, and the snails, of course. And I would also put vegetation, like extra bits of aquarium plants, in there. And all of those things produced pretty well in this 1 gallon container, which was pretty amazing to get such a high yield out of that 1 gallon. But so yeah, that's basically the word on those. The good news is you don't have to do anything. I don't know what the bad news is. Can you think of any bad news?
I don't know, maybe people come over to your house and say, hey, you got worms.
In your tank, yeah.
I guess that would be the bad news.
That would be the bad news, I guess, but yeah.
But then you can say, it's okay, they're for my fish.
And they probably won't notice unless you're doing a water change or something and they're staring very intently at your tank, because they are pretty small. I've seen them up to about an inch long. They can get that long. Most of them aren't that long, but if you leave them alone long enough, they'll get that big. It may be that once they get that big, your clown lunches or your grommy or something, finishing them off so you never see them that big and you just see the small ones. That's possible. Okay. Well, thank you, Robert, for your call and bringing that up,
Robert.
Because we hadn't thought to talk about them, so that was great. It worked out nicely.
Okay. Now we have a comment from Carlos.
Yeah. Yeah, he left a comment on the Facebook page, a couple of them, actually. And thank you for using the Facebook page, Carlos, and everyone else who has done so. Seems to be working nicely. We still want more fans, though, so if you haven't joined Aquarimax, go ahead and do it. You can do it straight from the website, or you can just go to Facebook and look up Aquarimax, and it'll show up, and you can like us or friend us or whatever it's called. I'm still kind of new to the whole thing. Anyway, that would be cool if you do that. By the way, we have some new videos up on there, so that's one of the first places you can go to see our new videos, like our microworm video, Walter Worm, and Banana Worm quick start guide that just went up. So check that out on Facebook or on YouTube, our YouTube channel. So to Carlos's messages, one, he mentioned that he had a beta, a placot. It was a yellow one, wasn't it? Didn't he say it was yellow?
I believe he said it was yellow.
Yeah, that sounds cool. He likes the placots too. I think placots are awesome. They're one of my favorites. I actually work with several people from Thailand, so I always try to have them help me with my pronunciation, and it's actually something more like placot, with almost you don't pronounce the T, but I'm working on that. I'll keep you posted if I ever actually get it right. Anyway, that was cool. So, Carlos, if you want to send us a picture, we'll put it up on our site on the resources page or something, if you'd like to do that. And he also mentioned that he keeps pumpkin seeds, because it was in a conversation about cold water fish, and he said he keeps pumpkin seed sunfish in an unheated 55 gallon. I thought, that's intriguing. We have never really talked much about native fish. A little bit.
Native to where?
Native to the U.S.
Okay.
Or North America, to be a little more broad about that.
About pumpkin seed. What are they called?
Sometimes they just call them pumpkin seeds, but I do believe they're a kind of sunfish. But I don't know that much about them. I mean, I've heard that people keep them. I know they're very brightly colored.
And where are they from?
And they live in the U.S. They're pretty widespread.
Freshwater. Like streams, lakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
How big do they get?
I'm not sure. I don't really know a whole lot about them. I mean, I remember reading that they're beautifully colored. Their behavior and appearance-wise, they're vaguely cichlid-like.
Okay.
Sunfish tend to be that way. I believe they protect their nests and, you know, that kind of thing. They exhibit some parental behavior, but I don't know a whole lot about it. But I would love it if Carlos would, send us a message, give us a little summary, either in a message,
send
an email,
us some pictures too.
Or a Google Voice, something like that, and let us know a little bit more about his pumpkin seeds. That would be cool. Or maybe if he's interested, we could arrange an interview and he could tell us about it.
Mm.
We could interview. So, Carlos, if you want to do that, let us know. We'll be happy to set that up.
Okay. Our third contributor was Andreka, who gave us quite a few suggestions, which was very appreciated. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for sending all of those. We appreciate them all.
We probably won't go over all of them on the show today, but... some of them were technical in nature, and just so you know, Andreka, we are working with iTunes on getting those fixed.
Yeah, the ones that concern iTunes.
Sorting through all their data.
Yeah, there are some issues with metadata and so on that we're trying to resolve, but that's taking a little time. But thank you for bringing it to our attention,
so
because
we
now we can fix
fixed.
It. Also, some of the volume fluctuation issues, we have taken some steps to address that, so please let us know if it's working or not. We tried something last time, in the last episode, so if episode 51, if that one sounded better, good.
And hopefully
we also tried a different tactic in this one to see if that's working, so let us know, anybody... Andreka, certainly, but anybody else, let us know if you've noticed improvements in
the sound quality of the podcast.
Or if there are problems, let us know that too. Okay, well, it's just about time for the break, and then we'll get back to some of the other comments Andreka had.
This
isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it? Okay, and we're back. Now, Andreka wanted us to talk about kind of some, how would you say it, some top disadvantages or things that drive me nuts as a spouse of someone who keeps fish. So we have tried to come up with some of those. And Andreka, you asked for like the top 10, and I'll be honest, I couldn't come up with 10.
Which is a good thing. We're all happy about that.
We came up with 4 or 5 that we'll go over. And some of these are things that, you know, just would drive your spouse or a roommate nuts, and some of them are just more kind of sort of a caveats for if someone's just getting into the hobby, just so they kind of know what they're getting into a little bit. So we will start at the end of the list and count down to number 1, because that's more exciting, right?
Ooh, dun dun dun.
Okay. Number 5. And this might just be me, because sometimes I'm kind of picky about stuff like this, about noises, is that tanks can be loud. If you have a pump that's vibrating against a cord, it gets really loud. Or, you know, some of the more powerful lights that have to have a fan to cool them off, it's loud. And that bugs me.
Yeah, fan-cooled illumination, like you use for a lot of saltwater mm-hmm. lighting, that can be loud.
And it's annoying.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a tank in your bedroom, you don't really notice it in the daytime, but then you try to go to sleep and the house is quiet and you just hear this. It's really annoying.
But one thing is that if you have a pump that's loud, there's probably a problem with it. It needs to be mm-hmm. addressed. It needs to be fixed. If you have a fan-cooled light that's loud, there's probably you nothing you can do about it.
The pumps, a lot of the time it's, you know, since it's kind of vibrating, it's scooted itself over and is touching something and it's making that vibrate, so it's louder. And if you just move it or adjust it, then it quiets down.
Yeah, this tank had a problem with that when we first set it up. And
55 he's pointing at.
Yeah, the bio wheel, the lid would get unseated and it would rattle and make noise. And we eventually got that adjusted. So there you go.
So some of the noise you can adjust to deal with, and some of it you can't. So I think that is something that people need to be aware of when they're setting up their tank, is how much noise is it going to make? Because, you know, it's not like you can train the dog not to bark. You can't train your light not to buzz. Okay, number 4, we put kind of in general as time and expense. And of course, with any hobby or any pet that you keep, there's a certain amount of time and expense that you have to invest. And in order to keep a fish tank looking nice and worth having, it takes time to do the water changes or to clip your plants back or scrape algae, you know, all the things that it's yard work in your fish tank, you know, it takes some time. Fish tanks can be expensive to set up when you're first getting into it, and I think we've talked about before about ways to minimize that, of, you know, finding used tanks on Craigslist or local classifieds, that kind of thing. It's not really so expensive once you get it going.
Right. And even
fish
those
food
expenses,
is a lot cheaper than dog food.
Yeah, and in our case, we managed to pretty much pay for all that with selling worms and things like that, so it's not a big deal. But
it kind of pays for itself.
Yeah, it pays for itself, but mm-hmm. and we make profit on the side as well. But mm-hmm. That's not always the case. If you're not, you know, raising something, selling a commodity that relates to it, that does it usually ends up being an expense mm-hmm. that you have to deal with.
Okay, number three, and this is, you know, an in general caveat and something that I find frustrating sometimes, is fish tanks are heavy. And if it's over, what did you say, 3 gallons, pretty much?
More or less, somewhere
about, you know, about 3 gallons, you can't just pick it up and move it. You have to drain it a certain amount, or the pressure from the water trying to move the tank, it will break the tank.
Right. And if it's glass, then even less than 3 gallons, mm-hmm. you don't even want to move, really.
So
it's a solid piece.
The result of that is that it's difficult to rearrange your room decor. If you want to say, ah, I'm going to move my furniture around just to mix something up in my living room, have it be different, you can't do that. I mean, unless you have a way that you can move it and still have your fish tanks be on display nicely and still see them from where you're moving your couch or your chairs or whatever. But it is difficult and time-consuming to move a fish tank. And so you have to have your room set up how you're going to want it to be so that you can see the fish, they're on display nicely, that the room is comfortable. And so I think that does limit the possibilities for interior decorating in your space.
Yeah, you have to... you can move tanks, of course, but it's not easy because you have to drain, essentially, the tank almost completely. And
then if you have, you know, issues when you refill it back up with that much water change of
yeah, you probably have to save it so that you don't have outgassing problems, mm-hmm. yeah, and so on.
So it's not impossible, but it does make it more complicated. It's not something you can just on a whim, oh, I'm going to move my furniture around for fun.
Right.
Okay, so number two, and this is something that we've had a little bit of experience with. We have 4 kids, and so if you do have kids and you're keeping fish, a lot of times the kids get attached to the fish, which is good. You know, you want the kids to be involved in it and enjoy these living creatures in your house, but most fish don't live as long as people do, and... when the fish pass on, especially if it's something with a lot of personality, you know, not so much as the schooling fish, but something like a goldfish or, you know, something big that has a lot of personality, that has its own name and things, when they do pass on, it can be hard for your kids to deal with that. And, you know, I mean, there's good and there's bad to that situation because it's a gentler way for kids to learn about grief than, say, the first time that they lose somebody, it's their grandparent or it's, you know, somebody really big in their life. It's easier for them to learn how to deal with grief losing a fish the first time that they lose someone or something that's important to them than, you know, an important member of their human family, I should say. But our 5-year-old daughter, Gwen... she got a goldfish for one of her birthdays, her 2nd birthday, and she was so excited. She's just like her daddy, I gotta tell you. She loves fish. This probably comes from being born in Hawaii, but she got him when she was 2, and it was very cute. He was round and red, and what was he? He was an Oranda, right, of course. The word ran away from me. But she named him Apple Fishy because those were some of the few words she could say at the time, and he was round and red like an apple. And, you know, she adored Apple Fishy, and he recently had some problems and passed away, and she was, you know, of course, very upset about it. So, you know, that can be, like I said, it can be a gentler way for them to learn about grief the first time, but it is something that, you know, with any pet that you have to deal with at some point. Okay, and the top disadvantage or annoying for spouse and roommates thing, and this is my top, wet floors. I hate wet floors. I hate stepping in puddles and getting my socks wet. I hate getting my bare feet wet. I hate the carpet being wet. I hate it! So, this is what we found. Russ found the best product in, can I say what catalog we found it in?
Yeah.
Doctors Foster and Smith, excuse me, their fish supply catalog. They have this groovy mat that absorbs, what is it,
eight times its weight in water. And it's a significant quantity. It
yeah.
doesn't sound all that much, actually, but you can spill a big quantity of water on that before it's even a problem.
And the floor stays dry.
Yeah, because it's got an impermeable bottom to it, so it just holds it all in, and you can toss it in the wash and in the dryer. We actually did a product review on it some episodes ago.
Oh,
but
yeah, we did.
Maybe you haven't heard it, but I think it's called the Dry Mate.
Something like
and it's
that.
Really nice.
And you just put it on the floor in front of whatever tank you're working on, and then, you know, whenever you're you pull stuff out or, you know, take your hand out and it's dripping whatever, it drips on the mat instead, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
I love it.
And can I just add something?
Yes.
Okay. Water changes can be really tricky if you have a sink that doesn't work properly. And
oh, yeah, that could have been
one. That's an issue that I have had some problems with when we moved into this house. We have one
it's
sink.
It's an older house.
Yeah, it's an older house. One sink that the spout on the tap is too low and too close to the sink, so it's really hard to get a python hooked up to it to do water changes. Another sink has, it's almost impossible, not impossible, but it's difficult to connect a python to it. And the other one was having problems draining. And so it really wasn't very fun. And we eventually resolved the issues, but it's just that can be a huge pain.
So if you're looking for a house to buy or rent, make sure you check out the
look at the sinks.
The sinks.
Are they compatible with a python? At least if you have, you know, more than a 10-gallon tank or something, then
yeah.
probably ought to worry about that. Think about it.
Okay, so those were my top reasons that we were able to come up with. So hopefully those are useful and some useful
caveats.
Solutions to those caveats,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Actually, another question Andrejka asked was if we had ever trained a fish, and we have.
Oh, yes.
And in episode 30, actually, we talk about it a little bit.
Way back in episode 30, now we're in 52.
The beta that's on our video on our YouTube channel, actually, he's trained to respond to a hand signal. He will not only flare, but tail beat rather violently when I give him a hand signal for food. And we did it using the positive reinforcement techniques that I love. I've had some training in that through work, and I've also done that on my own as well, pursued some study of that. So it was fun to train him to do that, and he's pretty fun to watch, and you can see him doing what he does, part of what he does in the video. He's not doing a very strong tail beat in the video because I'm not actually doing the hand signal. I'm just taking a picture of him, and I think the camera just got him to flare. But you can kind of see the idea. And now let's talk about the last thing that we're going to have time for today, I think.
She wanted to know about the proper way to sanitize a tank.
Okay. And this is talking about getting a tank from a used source. Because if you get a...
Like we talked about before, you get it on
right.
Craigslist, or a friend gives it to you. Or
yeah, something like that. You're getting a second-hand tank. One thing, of course, I think everybody knows this, but just it probably bears repeating because it's so important. Don't use soap of any kind.
No soap.
Because the soap is very damaging to fish.
What soap are you?
In terms of their gills, it can wreak havoc on their gills, and it doesn't take much. A very trace amount of soap can be absolutely lethal to fish. So don't use soap. Some things you can use, you can use a baking soda and water solution, depending on what's on the tank. I mean, sometimes I will just take baking soda and water, and I don't think the quantity is really critical, and I'll fill up the tank with it, though. Maybe put half a cup in a 10-gallon tank of half a cup of baking soda, and then fill up the tank with water and let it sit there for a while.
Kind of dissolves.
And then, yeah, it can help dissolve some of that goo if you let it soak overnight, and then you can dump out... Well, not dump out. You drain the tank, and then whatever is on there will often come off easily, more easily that way. Of course, if it's like carbonate water stains, that's not going to help. Baking soda will not help with that. Vinegar, on the other hand, can help with that, but it may not eliminate it entirely. You can use vinegar to help remove those, though. Some
Do they
of the
have products in the store that work to take them off that they sell?
Yeah, there are some lime... removal products that are sold specifically for use in aquariums.
And
there's
I
one.
Mean, do they work? Do they work?
I think they work better than the vinegar.
Okay.
Yeah, in my opinion, they do.
So it could be worth it if the vinegar's not cutting it for you.
Right. It could be worth buying that and trying it out. I've used it. I think the product I've used is called Lime Away or Lime Off. I'm not sure. Just make sure it's one approved for use in aquariums, and you should rinse it off thoroughly before you put fish in whatever you're cleaning. But those work pretty well for getting rid of that. If you think none of those are going to be particularly effective at sterilizing things. Although,
thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax audio show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. Or comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast,
actually send
a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.
Bleach kills fish.
The soap out, but there might still be traces on there that kills the fish. I mean, you rinse the bleach out, but if there's traces in there, it doesn't kill the fish.
Well, you do need to rinse it very thoroughly, but then you also use some dechlorinator because bleach is, it's chlorine bleach.
Okay.
So as long as you use dechlorinator, and you can use a little extra, use a little more than you would for just normal water. But first, of course, rinse everything very thoroughly, then use some dechlorinator, and you'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. You don't want any trace of bleach in the tank, of course, with fish. But people vary in the quantity of bleach that they use, and it also depends on what you're worried about and, so on. But
depends on what you're trying to get out of the tank.
You're trying to get out of the tank, but usually a couple of tablespoons of bleach in the water for a 10-gallon tank, a couple of tablespoons of bleach in there would be enough. Let it sit there for a couple of hours or even overnight, and then rinse it out thoroughly. Like I said, use the dechlorinator, and that can do it. But you should not smell even the slightest bit of bleach if you're going to put your fish in there. That would be very bad. If you can smell it, it's way too much for the fish. And even if you can't, it might be way too much for the fish. So just make sure you're really thorough. Can't stress that enough. Well, maybe I actually have. I don't know. But we'll go with that. As far as things like gravel and so on that are in the tank, I usually don't bother using it because you don't know what's been in there and you don't know.
So if you get a secondhand tank that has gravel in it, just toss it.
I usually do. It's often a garish, most awful, disgusting color. Anyway,
pink.
I mean, okay, sorry, folks. I know some of you like that. I shouldn't say that.
But what if it has like plastic plants in it? Should you just toss those too?
Plastic plants. It depends on the age. I mean, you can use a diluted bleach solution to sanitize those plants if you want. I've noticed though that if their plants are too old, a lot of times they become brittle. They start falling apart.
Break apart.
And then the little bits get caught in your filter, and it's a big pain.
And
so,
who needs that?
Yeah, so unless the plants look relatively new, I probably wouldn't bother just for that
and
reason.
And other tank decorations? Got, the little diver who opens the chest with the air bubbles, and you like that kind of thing.
If you like that kind of thing, I don't know. You can, most of those things you can sanitize with bleach, although some of them will become more brittle if you do so.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the basics, really, for that. Well, there were some other things. I don't think we're going to be able to cover everything in this episode, because we're over time, but that's okay. So, may the fish be with you.